Carolyn Servet is in the studio this morning. Carolyn, good morning.
Hello, Robert.
And she's joined by Alice Pung, a guest from Footscray,
yeah.
Australia.
Hello, Robert.
Good morning, Alice. I'm glad to have you here. And Carolyn, you're not here in your capacity as the author of Sitgo, Home in the Wild.
No.
You're here in your capacity as co-director of the Island Institute, and you have brought Alice to us for how long?
For a 3-week residency, and she's come from a 3-month residency at the University of Iowa in the International Writing Program there. So we're pleased that she's carrying on this partnership we have with them.
All right.
And she's going to be doing a reading tonight, so we're here to talk about that.
Reading tonight, Alice, from your book, Unpolished Gem?
Yes.
We have only 10 minutes, and I don't even really know how to tap into this story, but basically Unpolished Gem is the story of your experience growing up as the child of Cambodian refugees in Australia.
Yes,
And you take it from there.
Okay. I wrote Unpolished Gem. I started it when I was 19 and finished it when I was about 24. So it took a few years to write. And I started it with the first sentence, "This story does not begin on a boat." And that's because although we had a lot of refugees from Vietnam and from Cambodia who arrived to Australia's shores on boats, I came on a plane. And I came when my mother was 8 months pregnant. So I came in utero. And my father likes to say, "Oh, my eldest daughter, Alice, you know, she was manufactured in a Thai refugee camp but assembled in Australia." And so my story is a story of arrival. It's not necessarily a story of surviving the killing fields, which my father did, or surviving the Vietnam War, which was my mother's side of the story. It's a story distinctly rooted in Australia. It begins and ends in Australia. And the reason I said it that way was because when I was growing up, all our Asian literature came from America by Asian Americans, or it came from the Orient, from China, or from Thailand, or from Cambodia or Vietnam. And they were stories of war refugees, or stories of survival against great odds, against communism, survival against, terrible adoptive parents, stories like that. Because we don't have a distinct Australian Asian culture, even though the first Asian arrived in Australia in 1810, and the first fleet that arrived in Australia of white Australians came in 1788. So that's only 30 years afterwards. But Australia had this policy from 1910 to 1974 called the White Australia Policy, and that was designed to keep out the undesirables, people who were brown or people who were yellow. Now, because Britain is our colonial masters, they didn't think that Australia should have had such an overtly racist policy. They said, "You can't be overtly racist towards other cultures because, you know, we've got India and we'd like to keep India as our colony." So the Australian government said, "Okay, fine." And so they instituted this law called the White Australia Policy and the Restriction of Immigration Act. And part of it involved a dictation test. And the dictation test meant that any new migrant who came to Australia could be tested in any European language. And if they failed that test, then they were sent back home. So they could be tested in English, Italian, French, German. And if they passed all these languages, surely there'd be one they wouldn't know, maybe Maltese or Croatian or something like that. So that's how they kept out racists that they didn't like. Our most prominent national literary magazine, The Bulletin, which had been running since the 1800s, had on its masthead up till 1963, "Australia for the White Man." So that was its motto. And if you can imagine how literary tradition was so seeped in that culture, there was no establishment of, you know, Asian Australian literature, migrant literature, Aboriginal literature as well. So we got it from overseas, and I wanted my first book to be one that was distinctly set in Australia, about Australians and about growing up in this land.
Yeah, so your family arrived in Australia just right after the White Australia policy was abolished, it would be like somebody, you know, moving to the American South right after the end of Jim Crow or something. And you, as you grew up, you became a voracious reader, but you sensed kind of a vacuum in the story of your family's experience. It really hadn't been told yet.
No, it hadn't. We had a lot of war stories, but we had no survival stories, survival in different countries. And you're right, Robert, the story hadn't been told yet, because all of our popular culture also came from America. So I grew up watching I Love Lucy and Gilligan's Island. That was a culture I grew up with. And sitcoms like Coronation Street and Neighbours, you didn't see any people of different ethnicities on those programs. The books I read came from America. We had a series called The Babysitter's Club, which I read quite a lot because it resonated with me in a strange way. It was about a group of girls who looked after babies and young children. And growing up with two migrant parents who work full-time, I was responsible for my younger siblings. But then I started to feel slightly gypped because the books, these girls would go on picnics, they would do all sorts of things. There was nothing about changing diapers, you know, feeding formula milk to the babies, not being able to go out with friends because you had a full-time baby to look after. And I thought, that's not reflective of reality at all, or at least my reality.
Yeah, you were living the reality, I guess. Alice, did your parents have a choice about where they could go when they fled the killing fields, or did you go to Australia on just on momentum? I mean, was it by choice?
It was both, Robert. It's a funny story because my father knew French. Cambodia had been colonized by the French, and at the Thai refugee camp, he learned English. And then the embassies came and interviewed the refugees. And because my father knew French and English, he got accepted by the Canadian embassy, which are your neighbors, and also the Australian one. And he had forgotten his year 10 geography. So he went around. He had, you know, very short time to decide. And he asked all his friends, I know nothing about these two countries. What am I going to do? And one of his friends said to him, listen, Kwan, I don't know anything about either of the countries either, but I reckon one of them has snow. I think Canada has snow. And so that's how he picked Australia. He picked the one without snow.
Well, I guess I should just let people know you are sitting in the studio this morning with nice, fuzzy, warm-looking gloves and a sweater.
Yes.
and your scarf. You're going to be reading from Unpolished Gem tonight, which I think it is important to let people know. It's not a book about war, but it's about the after effects of war as your mother and grandmother and auntie came and began to experience things that we just take for granted. You were saying like escalators and common things that we sort of just get used to. They had no inkling of. And but also you mentioned your father. You're working on a new book about your father. Are you going to read from any of your work on that piece tonight?
I might read a little bit from that because that has a very different tone to Unpolished Gem. A lot of migrant literature was really quite depressing when I started, you know, researching and when I started writing Unpolished Gem. So I made it, you know, I was very careful and very deliberate in making it a funny book. And I don't know if the Australian sense of humour carries across, but this next book is, because I'm a bit older, it's not funny, ironic. There are some funny moments in it, but it's mainly about my father. So a lot of it is from his perspective.
All right. And are you getting something going in Australia? Are other writers following in your footsteps and taking this migrant experience and turning it into literature?
That's a good question, Robert, because my second book is about, it's called Growing Up Asian in Australia, and there weren't enough voices out there, so I collected about 65 stories of growing up from different decades. So we had people who were living under the White Australia policy and who are now in their 60s and 70s, as well as a 16-year-old schoolgirl write in, as well as some very well-known Asian Australians in this anthology that we collected. And so that's 65 new voices out there, and hopefully, you know, it won't be just a handful now.
Great, great. So, Alice, you'll be reading tonight, 7 o'clock at Kettleson Library. Carolyn, Alice is one of several writers in residence the Island Institute will be bringing. We have just a few seconds left. Can you preview who else will be here this summer?
We have three more people. A woman named Susan Power coming in January. She's a Standing Rock Sioux woman from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. In February, a woman named Thuy Le, I think. She's Vietnamese. Both of those are United States Artist Fellows, which is a... I won't try to go into that whole story. But and then in April, a woman from Chicago, Sandra Jackson Opoku. So it's quite a slate of people this year, and we're really excited about all of them. And pleased especially to have Alice here right now.
All right. Well, if you'd like to meet Alice and hear more of her writing tonight, 7 o'clock is the time. I know I started reading the book earlier this morning and missed my news join at 11 minutes to 8. But hopefully I'll be back on track later this morning. Carolyn Servid, Alice Poong, thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Robert. You.